CRJ230, this is your week 11 podcast. And we are continuing with our discussion of the exclusionary rule, this time as it relates to identification procedures used by the police. So the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution states in part, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall, and then there's several different things listed, as you know, but for our purposes here, have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Have assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, both pretrial and in-court identifications may be inadmissible if a defendant's Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, or 14th Amendment rights were violated during the investigative identification procedure. There are three types, basic types of identification procedures that you've become aware of through the assigned reading. Show-ups. The one-on-one presentation of a suspect to a victim or witness is a show-up. That occurs oftentimes on scene or immediately after a call. You know, I've been the witness at a show-up one time a long time ago when my now 25 to 30 year old kids were very little. I had walked them up to a nearby grocery store to get some milk and whatever else. And as we're coming out of the store, there was some dude breaking into cars. And so I turned the stroller around and grabbed the one toddler by the hand and went in, and this is pre cell phone days, and I went up to the manager's area and I said, call the police, tell them that Tom Higgins is up here and there's somebody breaking into cars. And so they came. As they were coming, got close, the individual saw the police and took off running. And they caught him a few blocks away, so they asked me to hop into the squad car. And again, I had three kids with me, and they took us down and we pulled up and sat at an angle where that individual couldn't see me, but we could see him, and they just asked me to identify the person. That's the kind of thing we're talking about, okay? The other is a lineup. A lineup is a presentation of similar-looking persons to a victim or witness. And you see this depicted on television shows all the time. So they'll have six different individuals standing in a line, holding a number. They all look similar, dress similar, and they're behind a one-way mirror so the witness or the victim can't be seen. And then they ask the witness or the victim to, if they can identify the individual that, you know, whatever the circumstances are. Lineups, of course, take a lot of planning and resources, right? You have to find six people who are available, who look somewhat similar, dress somewhat similar, and that's not always possible. With the availability of iPads or similar tablet type devices, it's real easy to do a photo array. And we used to do photo arrays with actual photographs. So the idea is you have a number of photographs and you have the individual flip through the photographs and determine if they see the individual, much like in the lineup, They see the individual who's the suspect. And so the individuals in the photographs look similar and they're dressed similarly. And then the person flips through the, you know, usually it's going to be flipping across an iPad to six different photographs and back and forth. And oh yeah, number three is the individual. So that's what we're talking about. Now, the United States Supreme Court has held that there is a right to counsel at trial. That's a fundamental right. The right applies to the states through the 14th Amendment, through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, and whenever a defendant's trial may result in incarceration, jail time. As early as 1932, the United States Supreme Court observed that the period from arraignment to trial was perhaps the most critical period for a proceeding. So let's think about that and break that down. Arraignment up to trial. So arraignment is what occurs so immediately after the individual is arrested. They're brought before a judge. The judge informs them of their charges, the charges that they're facing, and then it's decided whether or not you know, they're going to be entitled to you know, be free or await their trial in jail. That's the arraignment time. Okay, it's what happens immediately after the arrest. So it's that period from then up until the trial that is the most critical stage, or a critical stage. It's at that point that the Supreme Court said the defendant is needing counsel. It requires the guiding hand of counsel. So if that's what the Sixth Amendment says, and it comes to all defendants in state cases through the 14th Amendment, then it's an empty promise unless they have that ability from the time of arraignment on. So a critical stage begins at the initiation of an adversarial judicial proceeding. So whether by way of a formal charge, a preliminary hearing, indictment, information or arraignment, any pretrial event requiring the presence of counsel can be a critical stage. It's analogous to a trial, or if it's analogous to a trial, it's a formal hearing or proceeding in court where the accused may be overpowered by his or her professional adversary, the prosecutor. Well, then they're entitled to legal counsel. The test of a critical stage, according to the United States Supreme Court, is whether at the trial itself there's no substitute for counsel. So no substitute for counsel can be provided to the defendant in the event that a pretrial confrontation is conducted in the absence of counsel. If there's a prosecutor present for whatever the proceeding is, the accused is entitled to have a lawyer of their own. In United States versus Wade, the Supreme Court held that the post-indictment lineup is a critical stage of the prosecution, at which the accused is as much entitled to the aid of an attorney as the trial itself. So at any of those things that we talked about, now at the show up, it's not likely that there's going to be an attorney present. But those other items, typically if the prosecutor's involved in it, there has to be an opportunity to have a lawyer if the defendant or the accused requested one. And just for clarification, at the show up, and especially the type of thing that I described to you, that you can see that the prosecutor's not going to be there for that. Show-ups occur immediately after the incident, typically at or near the scene. They're immediate, and there's no prosecutor present. Now, even if no violation of the right of counsel exists, and identification may still be excluded, the core of the issues relating to misidentification is the Due Process Clause of the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. And these clauses seek to preserve the right to a fair trial. It's possible for an out-of-court identification to be illegal while the identification made at trial is admissible. All right, so if there was some issue with the out-of-court identification, the court could throw out that out-of-court identification and it couldn't be introduced at trial, but through witnesses, through people sitting in the witness stand under oath, an identification could be made at trial. Identifications are almost always made at trial. Mr. Smith, you've described the individual who committed battery on you, who struck you. Do you see that individual in the room today? Yes. Can you identify the individual by something he's wearing? He's sitting there in the jail jumpsuit. In-court identification. On the other hand, if the in-court identification is so influenced by the out-of-court identification as to be the product of it, then the in-court identification will not be admissible either. The test is whether or not the in-court identification is sufficiently free of the taint from the out-of-court identification to be trustworthy. And what we're looking at there, and if you've done the preparation, if you've done the reading, you watched the video, you've done the things I asked you to do, what we're looking at is those circumstances where somebody didn't have, for whatever reason, intentional or not, a fair photo array, a fair lineup, a show up without suggestion of whether that's the person or not. Any case involving a legally questionable pretrial identification inevitably involves the question of whether or not the in-court identification should be admitted. And the question is whether, under the totality of the circumstances, and you see that in the court cases that you read, and you've read plenty of them to date, whether or not the identification procedure was unnecessarily suggestive. And that goes back to some of the first comments offered, you know, for instance, in the lineup or photo array of the individuals looking similar, being dressed similarly. Nothing suggesting or being used intentionally or not so that an individual stands out is not suggestive. I hope you read the information I provided. I hope that you watched the video. If you didn't, go back and do that. These cases come up all the time. Identifications are made all the time in error. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I have seen it many, many times in cases that I worked, in cases I've read, in cases that I've heard as the hearing officer. Human perceptions, abilities to retain, abilities to recite, They're all over the place. If we were all in the same room, and I would ask you, we would set up some sort of scenario where we would try to determine distance from one thing or one person to another, the height of an individual, some of you would be closer to accurate than others. It's just the way it is. If we were to ask what color was the individual's eyes, hair, some of you would be more accurate than others. Some people are more capable, or not, I don't want to say more capable, but they're wired to hone in and retain those details. And other people aren't. Some people can remember the details, but they don't have the ability to relay those details on the witness stand very well. We all have our own different abilities. The one thing I'd close with, though, is if you are in a position where you're going to be the person who has to make identifications of this sort on a witness stand, then you need to be very clear in the reports you make immediately after the incident, because as you know by now, you get to use those reports to refresh your memory. Nobody else does. And if you're accurate in your report, you'll be accurate in your testimony. In addition, there's some skills that you need to, if you're not very good at retaining these things, it's often something that you can build a skill for. You know, it's a skill just like anything else. I'll give you, an easy example. If you're going to be out there with a job of seeing and observing things, you should develop some decent peripheral vision. So when you're driving into an area where you're supposed to be looking for somebody, something, a car, a vehicle of a certain type, a person of a certain type, or a person wearing a certain thing that's fleeing an incident in an area where there's a lot of other traffic or people, you have to be able to see, if you're driving a squad car, the roadway in front of you and all the traffic and the traffic controls, etc. But you should be able to see to your right or to your left. Are there any movements? Is there anything that might want to draw your attention? That's a skill. Something you can develop. So is your ability to focus in on details. To remember roadways, vehicles, different types of vehicles. To start to be able to judge someone's height, weight, age. To remember details about their person, what they were wearing. All of that is attainable to you. The average person has no reason to do these things, but you do. And for all of you who may be going into the other side where you're actually helping to prepare either the prosecution or defense or lawyers in a civil case, because all this applies, we have to identify people in civil cases. What we're looking at here applies. So you have to be thinking about these things when you're assessing your witness, whether it's your witness that's going to be put on the stand or the witness that you're going to face against your client. All good stuff this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Week 11. We hit week 12 after this. And, it's going to be a very fast-paced few weeks to the end of the semester. So keep up your energy and your focus. Keep up the good work. I appreciate you. If you need me, you know where to find me.